Hello, my name is Francis Pinder, and you are watching or listening, perhaps, to the Salesforce Posse podcast, where I speak with Salesforce industry influencers so we can gain a better understanding of how to excel in a career path from a Salesforce admin or developer to an architect. But before we start, I'm on a little bit of a mission to prove that there's an inner Salesforce architect in all of us. Because for me, a Salesforce architect is all about design, but not all design is architecture. So I think of an architectural decision as something that's going to be hard or expensive to change in the future. So if you create an object in Salesforce, put flows, put reports on it, do integrations, link it to other objects, this is going to be hard to change in the future. But I'm also trying to debunk the myth that Salesforce Architect is all about understanding the technical aspects of Salesforce, which is really not the complete case. So if you head to salesforceposse.com/scorecard, you can score yourself against a free scorecard that measures yourself against the key skills that a Salesforce architect needs to be successful, and also gives you personalized feedback at the end. And you may be a little bit surprised by the results. But back to the show. And in this conversation, I'm going to be talking to Kirsten Jorgensen, who is a solution architect and now team lead at WAG, an IBM company. And he is a fountain of knowledge around making Salesforce projects successful. So I wanted to pick his brains around the things that you should be focusing on to really delight your users and customers that interact with Salesforce. He's also written a fantastic book, The Salesforce End-to-End Implementation Handbook, which really is that end-to-end picture of how to deliver superior business outcomes using the Salesforce platform. So if you're interested in understanding how to link the visions and goals of an organization to a Salesforce implementation, or want to really show and demonstrate the value of Salesforce, or struggle to do that, or how to manage everyone wanting a bit more of Salesforce and really not knowing where to start, or even just understanding the common traps that people fall into running Salesforce projects or agile programs, then I think you're going to get a lot of value out of this conversation with Christian. So without further ado, let's go. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So I wanted to kind of get you on the show because you are kind of all things project creation and getting the best practice out of Salesforce implementations and making sure it's done the right way. But before we kind of get all into that, what is your history? How did you get into Salesforce originally?
Yeah, great question. So I think it was about 10 years ago, I was working with a company that was going to replace both the billing platform and the CRM in one go, going from on-prem to the cloud, Salesforce. That's where I first heard of it. I was in a channel management function supporting sales directors and contact center managers in how to keep track of their business and control it. So I was an SME in the Salesforce project from the customer side. And then some years later, I moved over to the consultant side, with the same company that was helping out.
Okay, cool. So how long have you been in kind of the IT industry before kind of moving into Salesforce?
Yeah, absolutely. So it would be around 5 years now. First 4 years at Capgemini, and then now about a year at Wake, which is a specialized Salesforce boutique company within IBM.
Okay, cool. So way Salesforce is implemented, I think it's kind of started to change, isn't it? We're seeing this shift in projects. Do you have kind of any insight in that and what you're seeing currently in the industry?
Yeah, sure. And maybe it's helpful just to go a bit down memory lane, even to before I was part of the ecosystem, right? Because Salesforce started out as this with only Sales Cloud, right? That's what it was, helping out sales organizations. You know better than me from back in the day. And it's then evolved, right, with both organic expansion, product development, service cloud, and then now spans marketing, commerce, field service, you know, integrations, analytics, mm-hmm. So many things. And companies also leveraging and taking use of all those great innovations in the mm-hmm. portfolio, right? And that's, I think, is what you're asking. Implementations, have they also, yes, they have also seen a massive increase in complexity, technically, yeah. Business. You're talking to so many different parts of the organization now that you weren't back then in the early days, right?
I think also people, I think it's almost like people are more aware of Salesforce, I think, now. And it's almost like, you know, even within your company, you know, people go, oh, we've got Salesforce now. Can we do this and this? And suddenly the scope of work kind of increases, yeah. I suppose, across the project. So how, you know, when you're first implementing a project, it's kind of like, it's almost greenfield, very easy, right? So and this honeymoon period, as I know you talk about, is kind of like the easy bit at the start, and then you start maturing and things get more complex. How do you see, you know, putting kind of governance and controls and things in a project?
Yeah.
And what are the kind of key things you find, mistakes that people make going along that road?
Sure. So I think if we just go back to that greenfield implementation, right, just a little bit, because that's really interesting, because it's not all honeymoon as such, right?
Oh, yeah.
The people you're interacting with on the customer side may have heard of Salesforce or other CRM, there's so many things you need to introduce, terms, best practices, what comes out of the box, what's not, what does it mean configuration versus not. All these different things is what you need to slowly use change management for to get inside, right? But then, yes, if we talk about the rollout and the continuous improvement, there you will likely have digressed or transgressed from being in this project mode to more continuous improvement of the domains you already have there. And how do you decide where to go? What user stories or features or business problems should you attack next, right? How should you do it? Who reviews and qualifies? Do you have a design authority? If you're working with partners, how do you structure that? Is it still statements of work?
Yeah.
Sorry, go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you said, design authority, it's like, when do you know when you need a design authority, or when do you, it's a lot of complexity in that, right, as well. You might be in an established organization that has a design authority, but doesn't know Salesforce. So how do you make those decisions, right?
Yeah. So I think, for sure. I think if, you know, in the traditional waterfall, you would have these gates along the way. Are the business requirements understood and detailed? Check. Okay, then go into design phase. Is the design, does that live up to, and so on. So there you had it built in, sort of, where if you're going anything that looks like agile or hybrid agile, where you don't do all of that architecture up front to the detail, then you need to have regular points throughout with a regular cadence where someone with experience assesses proposed solution designs. And that may be at a mid-level, or it may be at the user story level.
Okay. So going back to the greenfield site, if I've kind of like done an initial implementation, relatively small, but it was really successful, and now it's kind of been socialized within the organization, and people are kind of getting to see what Salesforce can do, and everybody's wanting a part of it, right? And want to bring their changes in. You know, adoption's high, and things are going well. But how do you manage that? How do you kind of make sure you're doing the right thing and you're not kind of death by backlog almost?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there the whole concept of the product owner really plays a big, big role. Some greenfield implementations are sort of hybrid agile or more agile, meaning they definitely need to have a product owner part of the development team. And ideally, that person, with all that knowledge that they have built up, should continue being part of the Salesforce team and would also know how to qualify any requests that come in, right? But you need to have a forum where you review these types of things. What should be assessed against are the product goals, which should be aligned to the overall vision and strategy of the company. But there, of course, needs to be the synthesis of what's expected and desired by the organization and users of the solution versus what's the overall business strategy. So that's where the rubber meets the road for whether this whole setup is really working, right? Because it's sometimes two different things. Sometimes it's aligned and that's great, but you need to have some guidance there.
Okay, and how does that work with, so you've got the product owner who is kind of the responsible party, making sure that what is getting built is relevant for the values and the goals of the organization. But how do you kind of balance that with like the architectural and technical goals? Like maybe the project's been around for a lot longer and there's a lot of tech debt in there. And actually, it's always constantly just swept under the carpet because you're focusing on the backlog and the business change, right? So how do you manage that?
Yeah. So ideally, the product owner is experienced because it is a senior role. You are making big decisions within your organization. So the person should be experienced, knowing there is something called enablers or technical enablers that need to be in place for the functional features to be able to be developed for the benefit of users. It needs to be a close cooperation between the architect, the platform architect, or the team of architects and the product owner or product owners. So it's a marriage, you could say. Because fulfilling a long-term roadmap takes both views.
So how do we get, so really just making sure everybody's included and that those technical elements are thought of as we're kind of rolling through the chain?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And if you were asking, so how do you do that specifically, concretely, practically? Mm. I think there are different models, right? Maybe the more DevOps-y is to say, we do it continuously in every sprint. We will also have some time allocated for technical debt or refactoring, continuous refactoring. For some organization, that works. For others, it's to say every 4 or 8 sprints, we will have a dedicated sprint just for refactoring. I think there are pros and cons to each way of doing that. The latter may seem less DevOps-y or less agile. But if you have that concretely on your plan, you know, okay, every 2 months we have a sprint dedicated to that, then it actually gets done. So better to have something that actually gets done than something that is, we'll do it within the sprint. But at the end of the day.
Yeah, I tend to prefer that as well, because also you can kind of like get the stats out of what are the slowest running processes, what are the things that actually you want to focus on during that sprint.
Yeah,
and so you're ready and prepared for it, rather than the, oh, we've got 10 story points we need to use on technical debt this month. Let's tidy this up. Oh, you know, whatever.
Exactly. So if you're not doing anything to alleviate technical debt or continuous refactoring, maybe start with that latter approach where you say dedicate a sprint or some time at certain increments, but then have the ambition to go to the more correct or DevOps-y way of doing it continually, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and also it kind of comes down to like the level of technical debt you're at as well, I think.
Yeah.
Is it a real problem for you for delivering change based on, you know, which approach you take, which I think is fine.
Yeah.
So also there's a thing called the center of excellence, right? And you've actually just written a book, the Salesforce End-to-End Implementation Handbook, which is fab.
Yeah.
And in there, you kind of talk about the center of excellence, the importance of a center of excellence. Can you kind of describe basically what it is, but also why is it important? When, at what point should this start to become kind of brought into an organization?
Absolutely. So I think maybe we can say what it's not, right? So it's not a management or that type of body. It's a governance forum, a structure to guide a team or teams of people working on the Salesforce platform, right? And when should it be there? So if you consider before you even buy Salesforce licenses, right, you will likely have a team of people in your organization who are assessing what should we do? We want a CRM or a new CRM. Okay, let's go with Salesforce. And then they're looking into what capabilities should be supported, the business case, all of this. Those people are likely some of the good people that are going to be part of the implementation as well and on an ongoing basis. And likely it needs to require both business and technical and project or PMO delivery people, because it's really those three aspects that you want to put some governance in place around. So both business, technical governance, and delivery governance. Why? Because it lowers risk. If you have guidelines and structures and guardrails in place, then it just lowers risk. Risk that you build the wrong thing, that you don't deliver according to your plans, and so on.
And you're continuously maturing rather than doing the same old ourselves as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when you're kind of working in Salesforce change projects, what are the kind of common mistakes you see happening when they're trying to manage a project?
Yeah. I think let's just highlight two or three of them, right? So I think it's typically that end users or the target users of your solution have not been involved or not enough or not early enough. And that's really a big risk, right? If you can sit and you can have workshops with yourself or some other parts of the business and say, hey, we really need this. But it's not really until you go to market that you see if what you're thinking of actually meets the goals, right? The other is that it's a siloed organization, and what you're doing in the corner, let's say it's an IT-led project, it should ideally be both IT and business all together in some symbiosis. But if it is just isolated and you don't have anyone from the business or from senior management sponsoring and being part of the conversation, you risk that you're building something that isn't really in line with the overall business and business strategy, right? So that's probably the second one, lack of executive sponsor involvement. So if you don't have that continuously throughout, that's a big risk.
So what would happen if you didn't, for some examples?
Sure. So if you don't have, let's say, the alignment to the overall business strategy, and you have little engagement with executive sponsor, sometimes people leave the company. So let's say you someone else joins to take the role of executive sponsor, look at the project and see, oh, but what you're doing here is not aligned to the business strategy. Let's discontinue it, or let's go another direction. So it's really this lack of continuity if you don't have all those things in place.
Yeah. And I think I've kind of been on the projects where it's a kind of a lift and shift technical side, where it's kind of like we're replacing this with Salesforce because Salesforce is so much better. But they're just lifting and shifting all that bad practices and everything into the new system. You're not getting the value. And it's not linked to any strategy or goals or anything approach that they're trying to go to. And you just lose all the value.
Conway's Law, right? Where if you're designing it within the context of your own organization and you don't have external input or inspiration, right?
Yeah, and I think this is where, and it's that kind of the tug, I suppose, between getting external people in to implement Salesforce versus the implementation yourself, or trying to do it in a hybrid way, and what level of engagement that has as well. I think because even when working at a consultancy, I think I've been in projects where it was almost like they let the consultancies just do everything, right? And they really kind of a hands-off approach, and you're kind of the consultancy are trying to deliver a result. But they've got nothing to go on. they're not linking to any goals or anything or a strategic vision. And then it's like, doesn't get good positive outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. You need to have a...
Yeah, sorry.
No, go on. I was just going to say, I completely agree, right? You need to have someone to interact with, to understand the context and the users and the business. Absolutely. It's key.
Mm. Yeah. And communication as well, but it's happening, but the people who are aware of it, the people engage with it to kind of get the buy-in, get the adoption, get the kind of the quick wins and what's in it for me, out. But okay, so Salesforce is all about like the customer 360, right? I think we've all been there where it's like, yes, we want a 360 degree view of the customer, but what are the kind of realities when, if you've got a project that is, we want a customer, a 360 degree view of the customer, go. And the realities around that.
No, I've heard and seen many different impressions of what that actually means, right? From account page layouts with everything on it and endless scrolls. So yes, there you have it, all the information you wanted about your customer. But is that in a meaningful way, right? And then also just to the completeness of it, I think, yes, it should be perhaps the ambition, right? But also important to think of in the context of the specific user. So for a salesperson, the 360 means one thing, right? It's certain things that are key and important to know. Same for a customer service, same for a field service person, many different types of roles. And then I think, secondly, it should be the ambition to get there, but it's okay to start with a 180 or 290 customer view, as long as that's the ambition, right? Because you do want to have that.
It's kind of have the right data at the right time for the right role.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, which is always, yeah. And it's some organizations, I remember I was working for a insurance company, and actually they were like, hey, because insurance is very siloed, yeah? Where you've got, you know, the organization sells many different types of insurance, but it's all very separate. Yeah, life insurance is one department, you know, home insurance is another, but they don't really talk to each other. And they were like, let's bring everything together. But then they started coming across challenges with that. So, and I remember there was an incident where they were, you know, rocking up to their customers' houses and saying, hey, look, yeah, we want to talk about your, you know, your life insurance and stuff like that. And they combined life insurance policies and home insurance together. And they'd have challenges where, you know, the people in the house didn't want the other people to know what insurance policies they'd had on them, right? Because they don't want to get bumped off by their wife or their husband or whatever. And actually bringing all these policies together as a family unit actually started, and so it's actually challenges even just bringing data together, isn't it?
Yeah.
And wanting that 360 degree view when actually you still got to have these kind of firewalls and visibility rules and stuff in place that not every, you know, yes, it's tied together, but in some cases, not everybody can see everything for the, and they're seeing it for the right reasons.
Yep, that sounds a bit more like also organizational business change challenge, right? For the insurer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Going to market with different divisions at the same time for the same customer segments and so on.
Exactly, yeah. And they know that they've got to connect together, but then, yeah, it's finding that approach that allows them to market right, but not, it's a challenging space. But how would you go about if you were, like, I know there's value in using Salesforce, and I know the organization can really value on doing some processes or doing something in Salesforce. But I know, obviously, I've got to get a budget for it. I've got to prove that it's worth doing.
Yeah.
How do I get a case together to actually pitch it to say, hey, look, I think this is going to be a good piece of work to do?
Yeah. So let's say, for example, that you are a business person within the company, right? Say you are working in sales as a sales manager or sales director, you will likely have seen that it works. Salesforce works for you, or it has worked for you in another company previously. So you want to interact with the executive sponsor. You want to get someone in senior management who can be part of that journey to convince the organization to go for this, right? You need someone from IT, like an enterprise architect, or someone who can talk about, okay, system landscape, how's it looking? What capabilities are supported by what? What's the roadmap? Where would Salesforce fit into that? Because you also need the buy-in from the IT organization typically, right? And then you need this this driver. It can either be yourself, or you can have someone from like a PMO organization if you have that. And then you need to go, you need to do the work, right? You need to interact and understand those capabilities. Let's say it's sales, it's account management, lead management, opportunity, quote management, all of that. You need to understand, not in the detail, but you at least need to understand what are the processes, what are the pain points? Because if there aren't pain points, what are you really trying to do, right? So that work you need to do, and then look at the KPIs, look at where you're tracking now. If it's a, let's say, sales domain project, you need to see, okay, is it our order value that's lacking? Is it our hit rate? Is it how long it takes for us to close our opportunities? So you need to look at what factors within revenue is it that you can change and want to change with your project?
Yeah.
And then you can build a business case around that together with someone from finance, and then present that business case and get funding. So it sounds really linear and simple, but oftentimes you have to go several loops, and that's all right. Yeah.
I think also it's kind of, it's getting their credibility, right? So once you've proven that, hey, look, there's a long lead time or there's a manual process that's happening here and getting X amount of mistakes, which is costing this amount of money, it's then proving it at the end of the day, once you've done it. Hey, I've reduced it by this and I've done this. And then it's almost like the business case, does it come from Francis? Oh, it'll be fine then, because he knows he's done his, he always does a, you know, his due diligence on this, right?
Yeah.
Which I think it kind of comes into that other part of that kind of managed project or Salesforce implementation projects, that kind of trust and that kind of moving from that functional way of thinking of implementing Salesforce and job done, kind of moving into that kind of trusted advisor onto becoming vital for the organization. Yeah. So you kind of start, I always find it's kind of like, if you're new, you don't actually know truly maybe what the actual goals and the vision of the organization are.
Yeah.
And it's kind of building up that trust. You are actually then start getting privy to the, well, actually we're selling five different products and there's five different teams all selling it. And actually we just want to, you know, it's stupid. They can all sell the same set of products. And it means we have a cost saving by reducing the team, for example. And obviously you're not privy to that initially. But once you start building up the trust and they know you're not going to go blabbing to that those teams, then that can really help you in the way you kind of design and architect your solutions.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So I was like going, so say I'm on a project and it's not going so well. Maybe it wasn't, you know, it was a more of a big bang project. You know, you're halfway through and you realize that's probably, you know, okay, we've got, it was a mistake. You know, we've now got a lot of stuff that we need to deliver. There's lots of issues and you've got problems happening. How do you kind of dig yourself out of that kind of type scenario where, or maybe you've kind of been brought into a project where it is a little bit chaotic? And what are the kind of first key steps or key things you think about or do to kind of try and get the project back on track?
Sure. So you're saying it's a project that was meant to be released in a big bang after a bunch of different capabilities should have been built or are being built, but have not yet been released. Something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I would follow the steps, right? So what is it really that we're trying to achieve? What's really key? So going through all the things that should be done earlier in the pre-development phase, as I call it, right?
Yeah.
Go back to the business case, go back to see what were the key pain points for the capabilities that are part of the scope. And then try to work with the project team to see, is it possible to chop something up in releases? Could we perhaps go live with, let's say, the sales domain or the service domain and then add on marketing and commerce later? Is that an option? Sometimes it is. Sometimes you need interim integrations. Otherwise, people will need to work in two systems. So there are, of course, trade-offs. That's what being an architect is about, is sharing the options, but highlighting the trade-offs with either one, right?
Yeah.
So I think be clear on what the goal is. See if you can chop it up so it doesn't become so much as a big bang, and maybe go with more of a pilot approach and then roll out in waves that set of functionality. And then you can always add more later.
You can even start small and experiment. It doesn't have to be rolled out to everybody, maybe. Smallest I ever did was literally account and contact, and that was it. It was literally a company Rolodex. And that was it. It was just to prove that the integration, you know, the data migration worked, to prove that, you know, they could see all the data. And then really, it was easy only, because obviously we didn't know if the data was right. So you couldn't create any new records. It was literally a company Rolodex, but they could do loads of reporting. They could do loads of stuff they could never do previously, which they found really invaluable.
Yeah.
And then we just slowly iterated from there. But
could they log calls and activities against those?
Exactly. Even? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Even just that, you know, it's just kind of a revelation for some companies, isn't it? Oh my word, we can see who's actually contacting our customers. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, also, you kind of get a bit bogged. I know I do. You kind of get a bit bogged down in the Salesforce is so vast and can do so much. You think that you need to deliver a lot to get value. Actually, if you really look at it and really kind of to talk to people and users and the vision of the strategic goals of where they want to get to, some of it is very simple, almost, just to get loads of value out of Salesforce by just using even just a company Rolodex and bringing that data together, right?
Yeah.
And so really kind of understanding that is like absolutely key, and kind of measuring it as well so you can see actually, I did make a benefit, I did benefit the users and they are, finding it useful. And now the organization as a whole can have a better picture of what's going on. So your book, coming back to your book, why did you create the Salesforce End-to-End Implementation Guide? Because there's a lot of project management books out there. There's a lot of Salesforce books out there. So why did you feel that you wanted to create a book on Salesforce implementation?
Yeah, good question. Well, through the years in consulting, I often wondered, there should be a structured way to do this repeatedly. Just like we have best practices and we have architecture patterns, development guidelines and testing guidelines. There are so many things. And sure, there is also for project management and there is for agile different things. But how do you mix and merge it all together in a Salesforce context? So I thought that's missing. And then I frankly just became confident enough and was pushed a little bit by someone I had worked with previously, Tamim Bari, who I'm grateful for giving me the encouragement to pursue it, right? So it's this mix of thinking. I would really have liked to have had this book when I started out in Salesforce. Maybe I don't get to work on all the different corners in the book because it does span the entire implementation lifecycle, right? Sometimes you're only part of the development. Sometimes you're not part of rollout, but it's still seeing what are the different bits and pieces involved and considerations, change management and communication and local deployments. I just think it's something that I would have loved to have had when I was starting out. And I also like to think that it can increase empathy. So because there are so many different people involved, it's not just end users and developers. It's many different parts of the organization. So if you read it and you get to see what changes for many different parts, it'll increase your empathy when you get to be part of projects and start to engage. That was my hope, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. And the challenges that other people have in the organization have that you can, definitely. And also, I kind of find that, I don't know, I feel that like Salesforce is a lot more business led than IT led. So it does have a kind of a different implementation approach, I suppose, than a traditional IT project where, I don't know, you're maybe thinking a lot more about the non-functional requirements, so a lot more about, the security implications, where a lot of that is kind of taken off your hands by Salesforce and not, as the case may be. So making sure you get that balance. But it's a really fascinating book, and it's definitely worth a read. What do you think are like, who's the book? So you said it's kind of like, it's aimed at like the people that you'd wish you'd had when you started your Salesforce journey. But also there's loads of other stuff in there, like, creating a COE, so it's not just, that kind of beginning journey, I feel anyway, I'm looking at
Yeah, for sure. So I'd say it's targeted at mainly end customers who are actually having and using Salesforce or considering implementing Salesforce in their organization. And that could be a product owner, it could be a PMO lead, could be a Scrum Master, could be an architect. It's really for everyone. And then I think it's for also consultants who are working with customers, because this really shows the considerations that companies are having to go through throughout the implementation lifecycle, right?
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Any other questions that you want to ask?
Not that I really, really can think of right now. I mean, I do know you have your last question, right?
And I have last question. I ask everybody. So you ready for the last question?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. So I ask it to pretty much everybody. If you could wind back that clock for a point in time in your past, and you could give yourself some advice, what point in time would it be, and what advice would you give yourself?
It's a great question. Let me think. So I think I would probably go back to when I started on the consulting side, like five years ago. And I'd been doing a bunch of stuff before joining, let's say, the IT side. I'd been in sales. I have a degree in marketing. I've been in channel management and BI and finance. So a lot of different things. And I think it's the same story for many different people in the Salesforce ecosystem. Not everyone studies computer science and then goes into development or architecture, right? So my advice would be have more confidence to bring your knowledge and your context and industry knowledge to work. And then also as soon as I got the appetite to do more than, let's say, user story development and so on, just speak up and say, I have appetite for more. Please, can I be part of, let's say, an epic or feature level design and so on. So speak up and reach for the opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not always just given to you. Yeah.
No, completely. And even that advice on all your previous experience you can bring on board. I think a lot of people, like a lot of my students are kind of like, I've come from this industry or that industry. And I think everybody thinks it's like I stop and Salesforce is a completely new thing, right? But it's not. It's like it's so linked to specific industries and industry knowledge and things like that. And actually just, you know, if you come from a retail background or a finance background or whatever it may be, all these organizations in those industries use Salesforce, you know. So and Salesforce is so close to the business. That knowledge is so important and so useful in your career. Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with that. And also, the opportunity, ask for those opportunities and find out, but like Trailhead, you know, find out more about, kind of give that advice and kind of go, oh, have we thought of this? This could be an interesting way. Yeah, and asking for that because I think organizations aren't really, you know, well, back in my dad's father's day, you know, they'd be getting training. It was a life career and all this kind of stuff. Whereas now it's definitely, you know, if you want to progress your career, you got to think about yourself and learn, you know, yourself and reach for those opportunities. It's not going to just come, you know.
Oh, and one thing, get a mentor, either internally where you're at or externally. Or perhaps I've heard of this guy who helps admins become architects. So there are plenty of resources out there. So use them, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And even if it's not a mentor, a sponsor, somebody who can actually put your name forward or really kind of go, you know, I can put you in contact with people that can help your career. So it's not even, you know, it's not kind of a mentor as such, you know, it always kind of helps as well. Yeah, brilliant. So you've actually created a website called the Salesforce Implementation Help Center, which is quite cool. Can you tell a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's based off the book where I describe four phases of a Salesforce implementation. There is pre-development before you even buy licenses and provision an org or get new licenses for a new project. Then there's development, there's rollout, where you want to ensure adoption and support it. And then there's continuous improvement, which is everything after. And for each of those phases, you typically face some challenges, some common issues. And it's around those that I thought, hey, maybe it would be useful for people to be able to access these different issues and the underlying root causes in a sort of knowledge article. So I went ahead and together with one of the technical reviewers, Tony Kamm, we built this community site or experience cloud site where you can go into sf-e2e.com. You can find out, okay, what phase am I in? What overall common issue am I facing? And then you'll be presented with the potential root causes, and then you can see the resolution or strategy for mitigation. So sort of like the help center where Salesforce has a technical how to implement Sales Cloud or digital engagement or whatever it may be, then this is more for the implementation help center.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been fab.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Now, please, 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 if you like or what you see or hear, then please rate this podcast in your podcast player, as it tells me that there are people out there that actually are listening to this and that it's useful to them. Also, it helps the podcast algorithms to kind of elevate the podcast in the different podcast directories, which will be really helpful for me as well. And finally, if you do have a question that you want to ask on the podcast, then head to salesforceposse.com/message and maybe you'll appear in the next podcast. But apart from that, thanks for listening, and until next time, ta-ta!